Now, what he doesn't have is modern archaeology, the study of coins, of inscriptions, documentary sources. But he wrote a very intelligent account, and he, just as Thucydides in a way, was influenced by contemporary events in his interpretation. Grote sets out our vision of the Peloponnesian War, essentially, which has persisted down to today. And one of the aspects of this course, and this course is divided in two halves. The first is what caused the Peloponnesian War. The second is the Peloponnesian War and its results. One of the aspects of this course is to deal with whether that vision is accurate or not. And this involves my own research in reassessing Spartan society and economy. And I bring to bear in this particular course some of my own opinions about Sparta and the nature of the war, which will be at odds with what is often read in the contemporary literature. And that is a warning that, and this is, again, my view. It may not necessarily be the correct view. Only time, if there is a correct view, only time will tell. In the case of George Grote, he wrote in the aftermath of the great struggle between Great Britain and revolutionary and Napoleonic France. And he set the tone that Athens was essentially the predecessor of Great Britain, that Athens was a society based on trade and seaborne commerce, that it was a society that was based on merit and democratic principles, that one was promoted by abilities and not necessarily by birth. The connection with naval power, it's something that the British understand instinctively. Athens was a naval power, Sparta was a land power. Sparta is a more conservative society. Although, if you think of revolutionary France, it's not true, and Grote was probably thinking more of Napoleon's imperial structures after 1805. Nonetheless, this vision of a conflict between a great land power and a naval power, in which the naval power, to put it bluntly, were the good guys, is an image that is passed down and persists to this day. It's become an image that has resulted in an increasingly negative and, in some cases, hostile view of the Spartans, who today are very often cavalierly dismissed as caricatures of the people I think they really were. And as I noted not too long ago in this lecture, that is one issue that I would like to at least address or correct to some extent in giving these lectures. In the early 20th century, this image of a naval versus a land power was revived by remarkably wide-ranging historian Arnold Toynbee, who wrote A Study of History and numerous other works. He was trained as a classicist. And again, in his vision, it's the First World War. Britain, the naval power against the Germany of Kaiser Wilhelm. And Sparta suffers in that comparison. Sparta goes from being conservative to regressive, less than imaginative, a society that's locked in traditions. And this image persists. It's especially revived in the debate over the reasons for the outbreak of the Peloponnesian War that occurred during the period of the Cold War. From 1945 to 1991, Thucydides and the outbreak of the Peloponnesian War, rather than the war itself, was studied with great interest by scholars, political scientists, policymakers, because it offered a possible model of what happens when great powers, based on electorates, can stumble into a major war that, by everyone's account, ended up being far more ruinous and longer than anyone had imagined back in 431 BC. First axiom of any war is no plan survives first contact with the enemy. Second axiom is you never win the war, you start out fighting. It evolves into something else. And in this case, Donald Kagan, who is the distinguished professor of Greek history at Yale University, in 1969 published a very important work, a seminal work called The Outbreak of the Peloponnesian War. And he argued, taking issue with Thucydides, that the war was inevitable, that Spartan fear drove this war inevitably. Instead, he argued that the Spartans were unable to control their allies, that principally their ally Corinth brought on the war. And he had plenty of evidence from Thucydides' account to support this. And he takes a rather optimistic view that in such circumstances, if the participants are pursuing a logical and rational diplomacy, such conflicts could be avoided. Certainly something very reassuring to one who grew up in the Cold War. That's when I read that book. I was 17 years or 18 years old when I read the book. And later I was to find out that I would end up actually studying under Donald Kagan, who turned out to be a superb mentor and a great teacher. Kagan's interpretation inspired a response by a very prominent British scholar, Geoffrey de St. Croix, who is a Marxist who, in his interest, he analyzes social and economic conditions. He, too, thought that the war was a great conflict that may have been avoided, but he's far less sanguine. He believes that the social and economic conditions in Sparta, which were based on the exploitation of a very large subject population known in the sources as Helots, who represented to de Sanquas something of a prototype of the proletariat and a Marxian model, that in the end, that very system within the Spartans' society meant that the Spartans were not really truly free themselves. And invariably, their aggression would be funneled outward against the Athenians. And he sees Sparta as far more responsible for the war. He comes around more to Thucydides' position, but it's not emotions and fear. It's really social and economic conditions that are driving this. And de Sanquas is the heir of a whole set of scholarly debates and articles in which Spartan society is seen as the quintessential exploiting society. That it's and Sparta suffers very much. And